Sam. Morning, Sam.
Oh, good one. I was looking at.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, it's my sister's celebratory birthday meal last night, just showing Al the picture. Good morning, Al.
Morning, recovery people everywhere.
Morning, Hamish.
Morning, Hamish.
Hello.
It's another morning.
It's a Tuesday
We're
morning.
We're doing the podcast, and we have to say something we've never said before.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
That's the challenge.
Right, okay.
If it's possible.
Is it April the 9th? How was the eclipse? Looked pretty spectacular. Looked amazing. Did you see pictures?
No. I don't know. I haven't checked my phone. Nothing from Lorna.
Your sister was there watching.
She's gone to Texas to see it, yeah.
Yeah, I just saw a few pictures and it just looked, amazing. So, hope everyone is well. April the 9th. My heart last night was just strange. It was just...
Because of the eclipse?
I don't know. Something was going on. And it was...
Doesn't sound too good.
It was weird. Whatever it was. Maybe it was something that I ate. But it was very strange. So April the 9th. Hope everyone's well. You cannot build a mighty temple without solid foundations. Did I say I hope everyone is well? Because I do.
Aye.
I do hope everyone's well.
Uh-huh.
You cannot build a mighty temple without solid foundations. You cannot build the new heaven and new earth without love. Love for one another and love for me. Love starts in the little things in life and spreads out from there. Sow seeds of love wherever you go and see them grow and flower and flourish. Seeds of love sown in even the hardest of hearts will start to grow in the end. It may take time for the seeds to germinate, but as they are tended with loving care, they cannot fail to grow. So despair of no one, simply pour forth love unceasingly and harden not your heart. Cease trying to justify yourself or your actions. Cease blaming the other person. Search your own heart, sort yourself out, and find perfect peace of heart and mind. Then you can move anywhere in true freedom and joy, radiating love and more love. There can never be too much love. Let it flow freely. It's interesting, isn't it, that don't worry about, you know, what the other person's like. So if, you know, someone else is really bitter and twisted and feeling out of sorts, still do it. You know, it's not about them, it's about you. And planting the seeds, you know, we do that with people that come into the fellowship, don't we? You know, they're dead against it. You know, they don't want to do this, don't want to do that. Just show them compassion, because we've been exactly the same place, questioning everything, rewriting steps. You know, I can do better. It's all part of the illness. You just have to think, yeah, don't take offence. Just shower them with love.
Yeah.
Plant the seed and hope they'll come back.
Hmm.
And it's difficult sometimes, isn't it? But I think, you know, when you're a parent, you know when your child's out of sorts and you still have to love them. You know, because you're...
Well, being a parent and you love your children means that you're fearful. You know, you worry about your children, you know, it's like... So the love creates fear. See, I haven't said that before.
I try and put in action and let go of the outcomes. So, you know, that's all I do, because that's something new that I've learnt. Otherwise, I used to be worrying all the time. What's going to happen? Depression's in the past, anxiety's about the future, anxious about the future. Now, if I'm
living... If you love something, then, you know, you're protective of it.
Yeah, but there's a really fine line between control and love. Love should flow freely.
I love Cleve Hill, so I pick up litter.
Yeah.
To protect its purity.
But say, like, someone that starts saying to, like, if you've got a possessive partner and they start saying, well, I don't want you to go out. I want you to stay in. I want you all for myself.
That's fear.
And that's control, which is coming from fear. It's not love. So we have to make a difference between love and fear.
So fear destroys love.
Yes. It's too possessive. Love should flow freely.
You should love someone and set them free.
You should love unconditionally, without conditions. You shouldn't dictate what that person should do. And I didn't understand that. I thought, you know, I was...
What about loving yourself? You know, that's...
I think loving yourself with your flaws.
You have to love yourself.
Understand our humanness.
You know, rather than hate yourself.
But
not be arrogant.
Yeah. I think we have to recognise that, you know, we're not perfect. We're striving for progress.
It is a bit tricky, isn't it? You know, don't be in self.
Yeah.
But... love yourself, forgive yourself, but don't be arrogant, you know, don't be selfish.
I think for me, just really realising that being present and instead of being, say like we're having this conversation and all the time I'm just in my own head, that's being in self, being in my own head. And when I'm allowed to, you know, I'm allowed to do self-care. I'm allowed to nurture myself, give myself good food, you know, put the right thoughts in my head, right actions, you know, the proper use of the will. But when my head was full of fear, past and future, I wasn't living in the present. And I missed a lot of the beauty of life by not being present because... so wrapped up in what was going to happen, the anxiety of the future, the regret and depression of the past, that I was missing the beauty of the day. Wishing my life away. Anand would call it living in the waiting room. I will be happy when.
Search your own heart, sort yourself out, and find perfect peace of heart and mind. Then you can move anywhere in true freedom and joy, radiating love and more love. That sounds great, doesn't it? You know, just having that peace of mind and heart.
Excuse me.
Yeah, not being in fear.
Yeah. And that's when they say, you know, God is love. You know, it's unconditional love. If you're moving towards God consciousness, is moving away from fear. You're thinking about the whole, not the self. You know, in the past it was materialism, what can I get, what can I get out of life? Now it's how can I think and serve of others, how can I put back into life?
Be of service to others.
The shift is...
I'm worried about my children, I'm worried about my mother. You know, I'm like, so I'm thinking about them. Not myself, but I'm in self because I'm in fear.
Yeah, because you're worrying about the future. What about today? They're safe today. They're okay today. It's all fear. It's all future based, isn't it? Today is okay. You know, I've said before, I could have spent the last, you know, since I found out that my dad is really poorly, you know, the last 4 or 5 years completely rendered useless, but I've got a program, and today he's all right. You know, we've put carers in place. It's okay. You know, instead of that constant bondage of self.
Mm.
You know, that I'm trapped in my own head for fears. And now I give the outcome over because I can't control the outcome.
Mm.
It's so freeing. So freeing.
I didn't eat yesterday at all. And I was hungry all day. And I was thinking to myself, there's 700 million people in the world who are hungry every day. Every day. Like this, you know, and I was thinking, fucking hell. And I just kept thinking, get through this hour. Just do an hour. Don't think about the whole day, just do this hour. And, you know, apply the A techniques, abstaining from food. And I did it. But I was pretty much in self all day. It's just activity was good. Keep busy, you know, distract yourself from your hunger, and that worked fine. You know, it's like, because it's just a sensation. You know, it's a strange one. So anyway, I'm not sure that's relevant to love, but you know, self love, an act of self love, and you know, fasting. That, you know, the idea that I'm doing something that's beneficial for me. But they're quite difficult.
Mm.
Joy's in recovery.
What's Bill got?
As Bill sees it. Keep going back to March. We're in April. The year seems to speed up, doesn't it? You know, it's like January sort of grinds along, you know, and then February whizzes by, and then March is gone.
Yeah.
255. Key to sobriety. The single 257, this is from the 12 and 12 and AA comes of age. The unique ability of each AA to identify himself with and bring recovery to the newcomer in no way depends upon his learning, his eloquence, or any special individual skills. The only thing that matters is that he is an alcoholic who has found a key to sobriety. In my first conversation with Dr. Bob, I bore down heavily on the medical hopelessness of his case, freely using Dr. Siltworth's words, describing the alcoholic's dilemma, the obsession plus allergy theme. Though Bob was a doctor, this was news to him, bad news, and the fact that I was an alcoholic and knew what I was talking about from personal experience made the blow a shattering one. You see, our talk was a completely mutual thing. I had quit preaching. I knew that I needed this alcoholic as much as he needed me. Yeah, that's just bloody mental, isn't it?
Yeah.
The first conversation with Dr. Bob. The key to sobriety.
And that really helped Bob, didn't it? Because he was a doctor. And he didn't understand his condition. He thought it was a moral dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he was just a really shitty person.
Yeah. Dr. Siltworth's idea of an allergy, very controversial to the point that he, you know, he didn't disclose his name in the book.
Until the fourth edition.
He was quite worried about damage to his reputation. But it's a compelling idea. You know, that certain types of people have a abnormal reaction to alcohol, and you know, the phenomenon of craving is that reaction.
Mm.
Once you put one in, you get this phenomenon of craving, and you know, this is one of the absolute bedrocks of, you know, AA kind of dogma. You know, it's the first drink that gets you drunk. Stay away from the first drink. You know, the only remedy for the allergy is abstinence. You can't drink at all. Otherwise, you get the phenomenon of craving and you know, you're going to have a spree.
I think what was interesting for me was that sort of idea perhaps kept me out, because I thought, well, why can I control it sometimes? You know, this is the first time round. The second time I'd progressed so much, it wasn't an issue. But there were moments where I could go out and just, you know, say, right, I'm going to have 4 drinks, and I would.
Mm.
But I was a binger, and people say, well, you're alcoholic all your life.
Mm.
But it didn't manifest into full-blown alcoholism until I'd crossed the line.
Mm.
And it was more covering for pain. It was when I was miserable, I needed it more.
Mm.
And then I got used to it. And then I had to increase it. Whereas, you know, it was almost like sometimes I could go out and I just think, well, why can't I just be like that? The thing with me, it was Russian roulette. I never knew when that was going to hit. When I'd drink so quickly that I'd go into blackout. And then, of course, I had to go until I was unconscious. You know, I had the capacity just to drink. But I think it was confusing for me in the beginning, because I guess that was just showing the progression of the illness.
For me.
Because sometimes I could just go out and be okay and have a good laugh. And other times, wake up, why did that happen? That was the confusing thing for me. That's why I never understood that I was an alcoholic.
Mm.
Because, you know, there were many occasions up into my 40s that happened. Some nights good nights, some nights bad nights.
Mm.
But yeah, I recognised that I was an abnormal drinker. It's like Sunday lunch, I'd have a couple of glasses with a Sunday lunch and then I'd want to carry on. So I understand it.
You craved more.
Yeah.
The allergy drove me away from it. I just thought it's absolute rubbish. I thought everyone's allergic to alcohol. It's called a hangover.
Mm.
You know, it's poisonous. You know, it's toxic. That, you know, and I just didn't get it at all. I didn't like the idea. And I thought, I'm not like that. And then coming into CA, you know, I was like, oh, that's, you know, what the doctor's opinion and the behaviour and the thinking described in there, it really kind of resonated in relation to how I used cocaine and cannabis.
Mm.
And had an abnormal reaction to cannabis and to alcohol, you know, in the sense that it was a stimulant for me and, you know, a euphoric rather than a depressant, you know, and, you know, making people sleepy. It didn't do that with me. So I kind of bought into the idea a second time round.
Oh, I definitely did at the end.
What frustrates me is that, you know, there's no medical kind of studies about the allergy that I'm aware of. If you listen to Joe and Charlie about the doctor's opinion, they talk about how there was medical research done where it was proven that some people didn't metabolise alcohol. Normally,
was it the acetone or something?
Yeah,
that they
resulted
about?
In,
yeah.
You know, you basically, your body converts alcohol to acetone, and acetone gives you this kind of euphoric effect, and that was quite good. But that's the only, I haven't been able to kind of follow through on that in terms of other evidence, and it's certainly not taught in medical schools.
No.
The doctors are completely unaware of it, you know, and they're baffled. They've got very little in their medical bag, you know, to assist alcoholics to the point where, you know, the best option is to refer them to AA. They can detox you, but they can't deal with they can deal with the symptoms, but they can't deal with the underlying
cause.
Can't
keep you stopped. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And sometimes I think, well, it's that level of acceptance, isn't it? We can't drink normally. And I absolutely know, you know, that when I look at my, you know, friends that don't drink now as much because I don't, that I was the driving force. Everyone needs to drink. Come on, we need to drink. You know, we go shopping to London.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I bought a car that has a fridge in it to get little bottles of champagne in it. I was obsessed. You know, I was obsessed by alcohol, even when I thought I was happy. So I'm kidding myself that I wasn't abnormal from the start, because I always wanted to drink. I thought occasions were boring without drink. I was obsessed. I was obsessed. Oh, that's a really good reading, because I've realised now I was kidding myself. I was absolutely obsessed. And I needed alcohol. And I was an alcoholic, but just in the making. But I was a confused alcoholic because I didn't realise that I could go sometimes without sort of that real phenomenon craving kicking in. But if it had been there, if it had been in front of me, I probably would have finished it. It's because it was controlled at home. You know, I wasn't allowed. Yeah, so I was absolutely an alcoholic from the start. But it progressed. It really did progress to, you know, daily drinking, and then drinking more, and then not being able to stop. So, yeah, the progression of the disease.
Yeah, the downward spiral. The Venus flytrap.
Thanks, Al. I'm glad I'm out of it. I think I had a drinking dream last night.
Yeah.
I said to someone, she was making the tea, and she said, "Oh, you're coming up for your birthday." I said, no, I had a drink last night. And she said, "What?" She said, "You're not upset." And I said, no, I planned it all along, and I had a drink, and yeah, it was shit. It was really weird. Maybe that's my subconscious sort of saying, don't even bother.
Definitely don't bother.
And I don't want to bother.
God.
But it was the aren't you worried about that? And it was just weird. It's like, no, I've done it, don't like it, it's fine. But I thought, no, that's wrong. don't even attempt to try it for an experiment. I know it's just wrong for me. Ugh. Thanks, Al.
Nice. Thanks, Sam.